You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
All right. Hello, listeners of CITR. You're listening to Dog-Eared Radio Book Club. I'm your host, Randy. Dog-Eared Radio Book Club is a bi-weekly book club that comes to you every 2 weeks, where I and a guest discuss a book. You can always contact me with book recommendations, or if you want to be on the show, or if you have thoughts on the book we're going to talk about, you can email me at dogearedbookclubradio@gmail.com, or you can also find me on Instagram at dogearedradiobookclub. Now, without further ado, I want to go ahead and welcome my guest to this episode. So my guest's name is Nicole. Hello, Nicole. How are you today?
Hi, Randy. I'm good. Very excited to be here.
That's awesome. I am super excited to have you on the show. So I know you, I found you on Instagram. You have a Bookstagram. You are at nicole.booknerd. Do you want to just share a little bit about how your Bookstagram came to be for the listeners?
Of course. I honestly started 2021, deep into a pandemic. I just wanted to talk to people about the books that I was reading. And I was listening to podcasts about books, and I found out that there's actually a thing in books in Instagram that are called Bookstagram. I was like, oh, cool, I shall join. And slowly made my way through to, make friends and just talk about books and everything I read.
That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of a similar way that I started the show. I mean, it was a little after things had kind of opened up in the pandemic, but very similarly, I was like, I want to talk to someone about the books I'm reading. So yeah. Why not create a radio show?
Exactly.
And I know you also have a podcast of your own about books.
We do. Recently started with a friend of mine, literally just been 2 months. I speak Spanish, so I'm originally from Honduras, and we realized that nobody in Spanish talked about the books that we read, like fantasy, romance, so we were like, we should do one, and, we did.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'll have to. My Spanish skills are very elementary. I've only taken 4 levels in university, but I think I'll give it a shot for a book I've actually read. I might pick up on some things.
Yeah.
Speaking of books, though, we have a fantastic book to talk about today. So we are talking about your book recommendation, 9 Rules to Break When Romancing a Rake by Sarah McLean. I just have to say right off the top, I love that title so much. It is so catchy.
Yes. Yes, one of my favorite things in especially the historical ones are the ones that have 10 rules or 10 nosake something, that talks about rakes or whatever. I am like, oh, I like that title, mine.
Yeah, some of the historical romance book titles are so clever, and they just stick with you, which I think is a great part about the genre. Yeah, so when I reached out to you to come on the show and I asked you for recommendation, and you graciously recommended a book that was right in the mood that I was in, which is currently historical romance, which was fantastic because I basically just went straight into this book. There was no transition that I had to do. So thank you so much. I appreciate it personally. And just a quick note for the listeners, because I realized talking to one of my other future guests that I'm very bad about warning people for spoilers. So we do spoil books when we talk about them in the show. So just be aware of that. The reason I think it's not a loss is because I think with romance, and again, this is with romance, I don't think it spoils the book to hear someone talk about it, because we know that it's happily ever after, right? That's the plot of a romance. So I think for me, it's just really fascinating to hear about a book. I recently started listening to this book or this podcast called Reformed Rakes. And it's these three book talkers who talk about historical romance. And if anything, I've listened to every episode and they've talked about books I haven't read. And now I really want to read them because I'll be like, oh, that's so fascinating. Like that character arc sounds so good.
Yeah, because it's about the journey more than anything. Because you know that they're going to end up married.
Yeah, that's so true. But having said that, if you are a listener who's like, I don't want to know anything, just put a pin in this episode and you can go ahead, read the book, come back and listen to it after. But if you're not afraid of a few spoilers, please keep listening because it'll be really good. Okay, so we can get started. The beginning of my show, I typically do this segment where I read the description of the book and then we decide how accurate it is. I think it's a great way to introduce the listener to what we're going to talk about. And I never, ever practice reading these. So it's always kind of a funny mess, which I think is good.
Okay.
All right. So here we go. There are things a lady simply does not do. She does not smoke, she does not fence or attend duels, she does not fire a pistol, and she never ever sneaks into a men's club for a night of gambling and other excitements. Calpurnia Hartwell has spent a lifetime following the rules, and as a reward, she's been forgotten at the edges of society, unnoticed and unsatisfied. So, what's a girl to do but break the rules and get a taste of what life she's been missing? Once Callie throws herself into a bold new world, she fast realizes a taste won't ever be enough. She's going to need a partner, someone who knows everything about rule breaking, someone like Gabriel St. John, Marquis of Ralston, charming and handsome, with a scandalous reputation matched only by his wicked smile. But the further Callie ventures into this new world, the further she gets from her family's expectations and all she once held dear. Will she be brave enough to leave her old life behind? Because she is about to break the most important rule of all, the one that says pleasure seekers should never fall in love. All right, so do you think that accurate, or do you think that description is accurate?
Yeah, I think it's pretty much what the book represents. Maybe the whole new world is a little bit exaggerated, but other than that, I feel like it's pretty much what it is.
Yeah, I think that's fair. She's definitely like expanding outside of like her kind of like
her
comfort zone. Yeah, but she's not really like going too far outside. Yeah, I think it's also, this isn't like a slight, I do think this is like a really accurate description, and it does like hint at like, you know, like the list, right? We have like the hinting at like all these things that she wants to do to like feel like she's living, which is very accurate to what the book is about. And we'll get into this later, but I think one thing about this book is the subplots. It really delivers on so many subplots, which I think was fantastic, which obviously isn't really like given away in the description, but it's kind of nice. It's like this additional little treat that you get.
Right. Yes, exactly. You didn't know about all these other parts of the story that we're going to come into play, and it makes it more surprising or more like, oh, it's more than I know.
Yeah, totally. Okay, so I kind of want to know, so as I already said this at the beginning of the show, that you suggested this book when I invited you on the show, so what about this book makes it like stick with you to be in like your top rated?
So for me, honestly, I just enjoyed it so much. My comfort books are usually books that made me just happy, that don't make me have an angsty. Sometimes like the whole time I'm just like stressed that somebody's gonna die, and this one was just a book that had like, for me, everything. It had a good amount of spice, in my opinion. The banter, or the way that he teases her, is beautiful. And just the little things, the moments that they have together, I eat them up so quickly. So I'm like grinning the whole time. I've read it countless times, and every time I just grin like an idiot. So it just keeps me, and I love reading it.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. I mean, I very much felt the same way. The banter and the way it's written, and I think the characters really give it like a very like lighthearted, but also I found it had that like angst and tension, which is what I wanted. That's always what I like to read. Not really like the enemies to lovers, but drawing from that tension that we typically like to see in an enemies to lovers, which like, you know, it just adds to the drama, right? Without that like tension and banter and stuff, there's not really that much drama. Yeah, I will say I was so hesitant going into this book because I always joke on the show and in life that I don't read a lot of heterosexual romances unless the man is like head over heels in love. I struggle so much when she's like so in love with him because I'm like, no, I don't really see it. and I mean that's just the lesbian me, but this book really took me by surprise because I was scared. I'm not gonna lie, in the beginning, that opening scene when she's like, oh my gosh, I like him so much. Like, he's not doing anything for you. Like, leave him alone. And I think the time jump and the way that they fleshed out her character, which again we'll get into later, really made me appreciate this book. Even though it kind of like fell into this category that I typically don't read. So that was really interesting for me.
Yeah, I feel you because I'm usually the type also. I love the one, obviously, the hateful first for me is the one. But the way that it plays out for me, I loved like Callie a lot. Like I felt very related to her in so many things. So it just makes it not like, oh, don't be so dumb, like begging for him type thing, you know?
Yeah, which I think like books can very easily fall into that category of like the begging and like embarrassing yourself, because I can't handle secondhand embarrassment in books. So if you're about to like embarrass yourself in front of him to get his attention, to get him to love you, I'm like, I'm out. I don't want to read this anymore. I'm not gonna like it.
Yes, exactly. I agree with you wholehearted.
Yeah. But yeah, this book surprised me. So I guess now I kind of want to I want to go into main characters. I feel like obviously they're like the bulk of the book. We've already kind of covered the plot, but I'll give like a brief kind of like summary. So essentially this book follows Callie, who is well, we meet her when she's 17 and she's making her debut. And she is essentially hiding in the garden because she wants to just get away. She's tired of like all of these fortune hunters and like really old dudes trying to dance with her and like get her to like essentially marry her for her money, because the earldom that she's in, or like her family, the earldom is very wealthy. So she is hiding, and then this man comes along and they essentially have this interaction where he says that she's beautiful. Not in those specific terms, but essentially like compares her to, I think it's a goddess that she's named after,
An empress.
an
Emperor
empress.
and
Yeah.
empress.
Yeah. So they have this like very cute, like meet cute essentially. And then he goes off and immediately starts making out with another woman, but she follows him and she's like, oh my God, he's so beautiful. I love him. And if you're me, then you're freaking out. But so then the book flashes forward a decade and we meet this, well, he's a marquis and the man that she met. And so we meet him and it turns out that he has this secret sister that he didn't know about that now is coming from Italy. No. Yeah. Correct. Italy. Yeah. To live with them, and they have to make her debut into society because she's 20. And so he's like, oh, I need to find someone proper to train her for her debut. And then that night, Callie decides that she is going to take a hold of her life because she's tired of feeling out of control. So she goes to this marquis's house, Gabriel, to ask him for a kiss. Anyways, they create this bargain where she gets her kiss, which is much more than she bargained for, and she agrees to essentially train Gabriel's younger sister, and then a bunch of whole other things ensue that we'll talk about in the plot. But she creates this list of all these things that she wants to do, such as be kissed, gambling, fencing, and they start to kind of do this list together, and that's how they grow closer. So yeah, that's like the basis of the plot. So our two main characters are Callie and Gabriel. Yeah, so I guess I'll start off with Callie. As I mentioned in the beginning, I wasn't really sure about her. I was very hesitant. I think also a really interesting thing is she's like a very like, I guess like, I think it's self-deprecative. That's not a word, but like, she's very like prone to self-deprecation. And yeah, she's pretty down on herself, I'm not gonna lie. But this isn't something I actually hate in books. I mean, if she was in real life, I think I would be annoyed if I was her friend. Could I be like, okay, I get it. Like, your life is hard, whatever. But in a book, it's actually compelling because I think it's more relatable, as you were saying, that than like this character that's just like overly confident and like nothing phases her. Because yeah, I can't imagine. And like, you know, the addition of having this like beautiful younger sister who like makes a, you know, comes out on her first year and debut and immediately is engaged to a Duke. You know, there's a lot of things in her life that have kind of led to this feeling of insecurity, and sort of, you know, leads to her being on the shelf at 28. But yeah, I'm curious to hear your thoughts more on Callie, if you want to expand.
For me, I loved her, to be honest. It's one of the female characters that I love the most, because I thought that even on her, the way that she felt, like, that she felt like her life was so boring, that she had nothing to do, essentially. Like, that's how it always transferred to me, that she was just kind of like, I hate that I have no adventure, and there's no way I can be adventurous because I'm a woman and I'm not married and I cannot do a bunch of these things. In Victorian era, and that she decided to take some type of control with the most innocuous thing, but at the same time that changed everything, you know. And I just found her so inspiring to be like, to take control of your own life, and especially her that honestly had so little to control over considering her circumstances. But I felt relatable in the sense like, yes, you said that she's just she doesn't hate herself, but she understands a lot that maybe she doesn't, it's not as beautiful as the other girls, or at least at the beauty standards that the English had at that moment, and being like, just being very realistic about it. I always felt that she was just very realistic. She's like, I would love to, but nobody will want to have marriage with me because I don't look like the blondies. That's how I always saw her. So I just love that about her, though. Like, it was just not like self-loathing, but more just like, it is what it is. There's not much I can do about it.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And I think that's a better way of describing it. Because she definitely doesn't hate herself. And she also doesn't have like envy. You know, like, she absolutely loves her sister and is so happy for her sister, but she's also like realistic in that, like, yeah, I would love to be a mom. I would love to be, you know, married at this point in my life, have a family. But it just like hasn't happened. And that's one thing that's like so interesting to me. This is kind of like a sidetrack from the character specifically, but in romance, in historical romance novels, when, you know, because I love reading historical romance novels with like spinster main characters. They're typically the ones I'm more drawn to, because like, I don't need to read a book about an 18-year-old who I'm just supposed to be A-okay with marrying a 35-year-old. Like, I get, you know, I get that it's a whatever, but I'd rather read about a 28-year-old. And so I'm typically drawn to those, like, you know, spinster narratives. And it is like a funny thing because, you know, in most of them, she tends to have this realistic outlook and be like, hey, I'm not going to get married. I need to figure out what to do with my life. Mm-hmm. And then you have this, like, you know, handsome rogue and rake that comes along and is like, you know, maybe like gives her some adventure. Maybe they kiss or something. And then she'll make this comment of like, oh, like, you know, essentially leaning up to like, I'm not going to get married. Like, I need to figure out what to do with my life. And he's like, why would you ever say such a thing? And she's like, I don't know, maybe because I'm 28 and no one's ever asked to marry me. Like, and it's just something that you're like, why are you so stupid as a man that you can't pick up that, like, this is her life? This is her reality. Like,
yeah. All the time. They always pretend, but you're so beautiful, obviously, because at this point they're like halfway in love with them. So you're so beautiful. Anybody would. And I'm like, yeah, but before you met her, you didn't look at her twice.
Yeah, exactly. So it's kind of this like frustration as the reader. I mean, obviously it's part of the plot and I just let it go. But it is like kind of like a realistic frustration of like, but that's her life. Like, that's the reality. So like, I think that's a really good way. And yeah, she's just like more aware of it, I think, than like other historical romance novels I've read with like spinster characters. That's not typically the main focus, but this one does, like, you know, that's her character arc, is like realizing, like, mm-hmm. you know, I've been so well behaved, I've done everything I'm supposed to do, you know, I'm very proper. And then she's like, why am I doing this? Like, where is it actually getting me? I'm 20 years old and I am so bored. I've never done anything exciting. Yeah. And yeah, there's this conversation between Gabriel and Callie after when they're at the fencing club. And so Callie sneaks into the fencing club dressed as a man, and she accidentally goes into the room where Gabriel is. So they fence, and obviously it goes really bad because Callie doesn't actually know how to fence. And so she ends up getting injured. And then, of course, he being Gabriel realizes that it's actually Callie. So dramatically rips off her hood. And anyways, some spice ensues. And then they're having this like conversation. And so she kind of gives this monologue about like why she's doing this, that like she doesn't have a position and she's trying to live. And so I just want to read this like little part from that. So, quote, he nodded seriously. It does. You're trying to find Callie. Her eyes widened. Yes, somewhere along the way, I lost Callie. Perhaps I never had her, but today, here, I found her. End quote. And I feel like that really sums up like what Callie's character arc is, and what like the point of this list that she has and all of these kind of like things that she and Susan that could possibly get her in a lot of trouble, but she's very committed to doing them anyways.
Yeah, definitely. And you see her growth, and as she said, like, founding, because I can only imagine being a woman at that time and being like so pressured by society about being this way that you kind of lose whoever you are at your core, because you have to be this way, you have to do this. So I love that for her, that she was able to find her core.
Yeah. And I think that's a great way of like, she's finding Callie. She doesn't know who Callie is. She just knows the different parts of Callie that like her mom and her brother and the Ton and London society have sort of like created for her to be. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think we should go on to Gabriel, or Ralston. He obviously goes by both names, as many men do in historical romances. So my first note that I have is he had a lot of work to do, because when we meet him in the beginning, he is an absolute jerk. Like, he is so atrociously like not, I guess not at the very beginning. At the very beginning, he's charming. But then when we meet him in the first like flash forward, when he, you know, meets this surprise sister, and then he has this interaction with Callie, he's very, I don't know, full of himself. I guess that's kind of the best way of putting it. But I did find his character arc, it was still compelling. It was definitely still compelling. I think it's like a common trope of like, you know, like the men, the heroes in historical romance, either their mother, their father, either left them or died or was mean. And so then they're like, I'll never find love. Despite the fact that like he has a brother that loves him. So I'm like, how do you not get what love means? Like, what? Because your mom left? I'm very confused. But I still found it compelling. But yeah, I'm curious to hear your thoughts on Gabriel.
You know, I think with yes, definitely all romances always have like daddy or mommy issues. With him, I loved him. I'm not gonna lie, from the beginning, I was like totally in love with him. But I do see that. I mean, he says that he doesn't believe in love, but I think it was more that he was scared. I don't know if they ever say it. I don't remember if this is my own conclusion. But he was always scared of what he saw more than what his mom did, like what how his dad ended up being. Like he was so destroyed by being left that he forgot that he had kids and just destroyed himself essentially until death. So that's why he was like so adamant about not loving. Because as you said, like he loved, adored Nicholas. Like, and then with Julia, he became, you know, also very like siblingly enamored, for lack of better words. So like so it was kind of like I just loved how he, I always, I'm a sucker for this type of arcs that come from like I don't love anybody, and then but really he does, and then he's like a total softy for that person, for that girl. I'm like, oof, you had me at that. Hate everyone but you essentially. Yes.
Yeah, and I think the author did a great job of bringing in Juliana, the younger sister, because I think like the parallel of having, well, and also his brother, his twin brother, Nicholas, like I think both of them, both relationships did a lot to like flesh out, you know, yeah, exactly, his like fears and his aspirations and like who he was as a person outside of just being his like archetype of being a rake. And so I think, honestly, I super love the subplot of Juliana. And I think, like, that really did a lot for me to like him. Don't get me wrong. I was in it because I was like, this is a romance. Like, we all know what's going to happen. So I was like, I don't hate you. But I feel like that subplot did a lot to, like, push me beyond, like, not hating him to liking him.
Right. Fair enough. That's fair. I mean, yeah. He's a little bit... standoffish, and like he comes out as a jerk a lot of times, not that he isn't, but it's more like I think his way of protecting himself, his heart, because he knows that's what I always think, that they know that they can love deeply, and if they allow it himself, hurt is around the corner, and that comes with the trauma that they always come, you know, so it's like their way of pushing people out. But with Juliana, I always love that. Like, Juliana made him a lot softer.
Yeah. Yeah, I have an older brother who's not worth anything. So I love reading plots where, like, the older brother is. And I'm like, this is so sweet. This is what every person with an older brother deserves. I was, like, freaking love Nicholas. He is so great. Yes. Like, as an older, like, their dynamics, I mean, I'm kind of going into like the next part, but just very quickly before we take an ad break, I truly love their dynamic. Every kind of interaction they had between I'm saying Nicholas, but I meant Benedict. That's who I meant. I'm sorry.
Yes.
I mean, I also love Nicholas. Don't get me wrong. He's great. But I meant Benedict. But yeah, yeah. Benedict and Callie, I feel like every interaction they had was just like so fantastic. But yes, also Nicholas and later Gabriel were good older brothers as well.
Yes. Gabriel took a longer time to understand that he needed to show, because I felt like from the get-go, he was like, she's my sister, I'll protect her. He's the protector type, but he doesn't necessarily have to show it, right? He mm-hmm. keeps himself so enclosed to what he is that he didn't show Juliana up until almost the end that he really actually loved her and wanted her to stay, not just because what she's supposed to do, but because it's her sister and they love her.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. All right, listeners, we're going to take a very quick ad break. So please stay tuned. Here at the end of the episode, we'll be back after just a few minutes.
Tune in every Thursday from 11 p.m. till midnight for Copy and Paste with your host, Tim, a.k.a. Autonomy, the very best in underground dance music.
Everyone at VAMS understands the challenges of having a disability in an able-bodied world. Since 1988, the Vancouver Adapted Music Society has supported musicians with disabilities on their journeys. Check out Reimagine Radio on YouTube to learn more about our diverse community. To stay up to date with us, subscribe to the channel and drop a like to show some support.
Do you love being caffeinated? And do you hate that greedy, soulless international conglomerates are succeeding in the cutthroat world of coffee? Sounds like local coffee roasters Trek Coffee is for you. Trek Coffee is 100% indigenous and military veteran owned and operated. Let's keep small businesses thriving. Stop by Sunshine Convenience on 4th, the Super Value on Commercial, or Grocery Checkout in the Nest to pick up some Trek Coffee today.
In October of 2022, the Vancouver Adapted Music Society held its flagship event, the Strong Sessions, for the fifth time. All Strong Sessions feature a variety of musicians with disabilities, paired with established local artists and bands. Each month until September this year, BAMS will be releasing the performances from our 2022 show on the Reimagine Radio YouTube channel, where you can also find past Strong Sessions content. To stay up to date with us, subscribe to the channel and drop a like to show some support.
All right, and welcome back to Dog Eared Radio Book Club. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM. I'm Randy, the host of this show, and I'm joined today by my guest, Nicole. And we are talking about the book, 9 Rules to Break When Romancing a Rake by Sarah McLean. So far, we've kind of talked about the characters, the plot of the book. And just before the break, we went into the sibling dynamics of this book, which we both really like. And so I kind of like said this before the break, but I really liked Benedict and Callie. I feel like they had this sort of like, although he's like still the protective, you know, quote unquote, older brother, I think they still had like an even footing in their interactions. Like you could tell that they were like siblings who grew up playing together, not just like this vastly older guy who like took over owning her from her father, which was much more interesting to read. I think it's like a much better dynamic. Yeah, they were great.
Yeah, no, absolutely. One of my favorite things is I hope, can I talk about this like from the ending or we should wait? Because it's like one of my favorite things is when Ralston comes and he's like, because he wants to marry Polly. But then they're like, I think it was she found out about Oxford and the money that they had on about Callie marrying Oxford or whatever. And yeah, he comes to Benny and he's like, yeah, the vet. And then comes to Benny and then he's like, I basically had sex with your sister, so she has to marry me because that's how it was, right? And he's like, if she doesn't want to marry you, I won't force her. And I love that because it's very rare that you see that in historical romances. And don't get me wrong, I get the brother that would force her because her reputation would be destroyed and blah, 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 the consequences. So I understand that, but I love that in this case, Benny was like, as much as I don't want to see that reputation broken, if she doesn't want to, I won't force her. And I just like, I'm like, that I feel like says everything about their relationship. It was like the best.
Yeah, definitely. Well, yeah, there wasn't like, even though there was the power hierarchy between them, it wasn't like not like he didn't utilize it, essentially, is what I'm saying. Like he didn't like he wasn't overbearing. Yes. Yeah. And I like that scene. I also like the scene where she comes back from the bar, a tavern. That's what it is. And tavern, she's running yes. to Gabriel and she's tried her scotch, which she hated. Quite relatable. There's a lot of scotch that's really bad.
Yeah, 100%.
And then, but she gets home and her older brother, affectionately known as Benny, is like, where were you? Where have you been? And then she's like trying to be funny and be like, would you believe me if I said, you know, I've been here the whole time? And he's like, no. And he's like really mad. And anyway, so they have this kind of like argument. But at the end of it, then he allows her to smoke. Is it Sherroot? Is that? Yeah.
Yeah.
which he ends up hating, which again, very funny. But I think that that scene, like, it's another one that just points out this dynamic of, like, you know, they're able to have fun, they laugh together, which, yeah, I think it just adds to the book. It adds so much, which, like, similar to, like, Juliana and Gabriel, their scene of when Juliana buys him the book and gifts it to him. And they're, like, chatting, and, like, it's after essentially Callie has yelled at Gabriel being like, you need to actually tell your sister that you love her, because she's not going to get it by you being overprotective and overbearing. Like, we know that's how you're, like, showing your love, but you just got to tell her that you love her.
Yeah. And I love that. I love that Callie fought so much for Julia too. It is. It was so. As that's another thing, other than the siblings' relationship, is that the friendships that between Juliana and Callie, and then also Callie's sister, Mariana, and, like, they become, like, I loved their friendship too. How it just became, they had this very fast friendship, and then they were, like, protectors for each other, essentially. Not just because she was half in love with Ralston, but because she really cared for her.
Yeah, I think, again, the author did, like, a great job of developing these, like, side characters, side plots, and, like, these relationships outside of the romance novel, or, like, the main romance plot. I find sometimes when I read romance novels, I leave it and I'm like, are they literally the only people in each other's lives? Like, I'm like, this is not healthy. You should have other people. And so I think this way of, like, fleshing it out and showing how many people they actually love, it made me cheer for it even more, because I was like, yeah, you should be in a relationship because you also are surrounded by all these people, you know, that deeply care about you and want you to be happy. So you can be quite successful in this. Yeah. I also loved Mariana. I think that I think it was particular because I just finished this historical romance, like, a couple weeks ago, and essentially the older sister in that book, she had essentially, like, sacrificed her season, and she agreed to marry this guy. It's a very complex book. Anyway, she agreed to marry this guy to get money to fund her younger sister's dowry because she was just about to come out, and her family had lost all their money. And she immediately, the younger sister, marries this older duke. Like, he's, like, 60 or something, and, like, already has full-grown kids. And the older sister's like, why would you do that? Like, I literally, I did this so that you could find love. And the younger sister is just, like, very essentially childish about it and is like, I just want to be wealthy. And, like, again, I think if obviously, like, if you hear her perspective, it might have been different. But I think in the book, it came across as just, like, very childish, and I didn't enjoy reading that dynamic. So I really liked, even though there's, like, a 10-year age gap between Mariana and Callie, they're still, again, they have that, like, you know, Callie doesn't treat her like a child, and Mariana isn't acting like a child, right? Like, she's still, like, younger. You can tell she's a bit more naive to the world, but she's not, like, you know, outright doing very dumb things.
Yes, I agree with you. Yes, 100%. Like, their sisterly relationship was very sweet, especially considering that the 10-year gap, that they could have been very distant with each other, because it's normal, right? You're in two different stages of your life. But somehow they were very close, and Callie was doing everything for Mariana that she could, and Mariana, though, was also like, whatever you need me to do, I'll do it if it's in my power. So it's very endearing.
Yeah, it was fantastic. Okay, so I want to move on to another point that you already brought up, the use of, like, banter and sarcasm in this book. I have a good example coming from the one and only Benedict, which I already talked about. This scene is after Callie gets home from going to the tavern. And Benedict very sarcastically says, quote, unlike an unmarried lady, the daughter of an earl, asking one of London's most notorious rakes for a recommendation to a tavern. That, of course, is the very epitome of becoming, end quote. I feel like this is what I chose to highlight. So that's why I have it in my notes here. But there was obviously so many good quips in this book that really like had me smiling, like laughing, giggling. And I always love that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Sarah McLean in general, I think she has a gift for that. Like in her books, she's one of my favorite authors, and she has that in her books so easily.
Yeah, it's definitely something I look for in romance novels, because I'm super sarcastic. So I'm like, if none of these characters are going to be sarcastic, why would I read it? It's so boring. But
yes, I agree.
So yeah, I find that good. Yeah, it added, I think, a lot to this plot. The other thing that I wanted to mention is, so the podcast I mentioned at the top of the show that I've been listening to, Reformed Rakes, they did an episode on miscommunication in novels. And this is like a big fight on Book Talk. Okay, it's not like a big fight on Book Talk, but when I first joined, people were like very definitive against it, of like, I don't like miscommunication in romance novels. I love miscommunication in romance novels. And I was like, what romance novel are you reading that doesn't even have a little bit of miscommunication? Because that's essentially how you like create the drama. And I think that also like miscommunication is like misunderstanding. So this book obviously has like a few examples of that, but I think it does it in a compelling way, because a lot of people's arguments, and they point this out in the podcast episode, so I highly recommend you go listen to it. I'll probably link it in the show notes for listeners. But one thing they point out is like, it's like people's defense is like, oh, well, if they just have a conversation, they'd solve everything. I don't think, but in this case, like this book does it well, that it wouldn't. Like they have several conversations. And because Gabriel has this very intense fear of, you know, admitting to these feelings and actually falling in love with Callie, he's not going to like admit it. And same with Callie. Why would she ever admit that she loves him? Like that's incredibly freaky, because everything he's done has shown her that she believes that he doesn't love her. And so you can see how Callie and Gabriel both have this construction in their head about what their relationship is like. So I just found, again, the way this book is written, I found it compelling that like I wasn't annoyed with either of them, because I was like, yeah, that's real. There's no way I'd just tell somebody that I love them when I was like, every piece of evidence was that they didn't love me. So I'm curious to hear your thoughts on that for this book.
Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to remember in this case, because I don't think I've ever thought about it as miscommunication in this book, mostly because, as you said, well, it's just that I felt like at the end, when they were finally trying to admit their feelings, it was more like Gabriel couldn't even recognize that what he was, because of how alienated he was. And then probably I didn't blame her, because I mean, I think that he showed her more that he actually did care for her, maybe not fully on in love, but that he did care for her. But I understand, like, obviously he has never had a problem telling her, I don't believe in love and I will never fall in love and blah, blah, blah. So obviously why would she believe that suddenly he's in love with her? Right. And then, about when they fight because Oxford told her like he's only with you because of the bet. And then why would she believe that was not the case, right? Because usually I would get mad at being like, stay, instead of acting like a crazy person, stay and talk about it. But I at this point I was like, actually I get her, because before that, like, almost out of nowhere, somebody tells you he had a bet, and you're like thinking about everything that happened, like, this is the only reason why he's with me, never was for more. So I'm like, so I didn't feel that it was very miscommunication, in the sense of like the whole book drags out because they didn't communicate their feelings, you know what I mean? It was more like at the end there were a couple of misunderstandings, as you said, but it wasn't the whole plot that revolved around them, because you just saw them fall in love throughout the book. The book was more about Juliana that and then the stolen moments that they had in her list, and not necessarily the main thing was they keep fighting each other, their feelings. You know what I mean?
I do. Yeah. I definitely, I definitely agree with that. I think the reason I use, like miscommunication or misunderstanding, is because of those specific scenes, because I find readers will hyperfixate on those scenes and then label it as that. And the scene that I'm really thinking of is when Nicholas and Gabriel are in his study or the library, I forget which one, and they're having this conversation, and Nicholas is basically trying to probe Gabriel, being like, how do you feel? Like, you know, how do you feel better? And he then, like, essentially lashes out and is like, how could I ever love someone so plain and, like, boring? I forget the words he used. And, of course, Callie is standing right outside the door. This is a very typical romance book scene that we see. But in this book, she doesn't, like, run away. She stays there. Yes. And then when the doors open, she's like, well, you're arrogant. And then they immediately just, like, start fighting, because she's like, I'm not even going to focus on this because I already knew, again, her, like, perspective of, like, well, you were never going to love me anyways. And so she's kind of just, like, settled into, like, you know, this is what I get. And he's the one that's, like, clearly in love with her and just, like, can't get his life together. So she immediately is like, I'm here to defend Juliana. Like, that's all I care about, because you need to be better to her. First of all, I think that says so much about her character. Absolutely phenomenal. Great, like, big sister energy, you know, what we want in, like, an older friend or, like, a big sister or, like, you know, someone looking out for us. But yeah, I think whereas, like, a lot of people would be like, oh, well, if he just said, like, I didn't mean it, that wouldn't do anything for Callie. Because, again, there's so much leading up. As you said, like, the book is, it drags it out, and it's in every part of the book, that it's not something that we can just solve with one conversation. And it's sort of like, it's like if you're building a tower with Lego blocks, it adds Lego blocks throughout the whole book. And then we get, like, the roof at the very end where he actually confesses, like, why he loves her. Which, yeah, I immensely enjoy it, because it kept me, like, the drama just, like, kept me coming back. I love it so much.
Yeah, it's true. And I mean, miscommunication is one of those that it can either be done horribly and you hate it every second, or as in this case, there's little miscommunication things, but the book doesn't focus it so much on it that it makes you want to scream.
Yeah. And it's not like, if there was no, like, if she was convinced, right? I think this is a way that it would have been, like, maybe what people see as, like, an annoying miscommunication. So, like, say that at that point in the book, she was convinced that he loved her, and he had, like, done things that made it seem like they were in love. And then all of a sudden he says, like, this thing to her brother, and then she, like, storms away and they don't talk about it. And she's like, I'm just mad at you. Like, yeah, I get it. Like, that's a little less, like, that's just less developed, right? So it's less satisfying. Whereas this is, like, so much deeper to both characters.
Yeah. Like, it's very realistic in a way of, like, we talk about it and we still didn't resolve things, but things aren't, like, you know, bottling up inside that you're just like, oh my God, if it bothers you this much, just go talk about it. That you don't hear about it three chapters later and you're still fixated on the same little thing. And you're just like, ay Dios, if you could just talk about it, it would be perfect.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so that's why I really defend the use of, like, misunderstandings, miscommunications, because to me, it's, like, part of what adds the drama. Like, that's what drama is based around. Like, that's why most people don't have these, like, very dramatic lives, because, I don't know, like, with my friends, I just tell them things. You know, I'm not out here, like, keeping deep, dark secrets. I mean, I have some secrets, but, you know, for the most part, you're just, like, communicating. You're saying, like, I don't like this, or, like, you know, and just, like, so most of us aren't having these, like, all out screaming battles of, like, you know, why did you say that? Because you'd just be like, oh, I actually didn't say it, or, like, you missed the context. But I don't want that. That's the exact reason I watch all of Vampire Diaries, because I wasn't there for communication. I was there for the drama. Okay. All of the drama.
So true.
The one thing I wanted to chat about, well, and also hear yours, but my favorite scene in this book is when she burns her lace cap. So that's kind of like the start of her, like, I'm done being prim and proper. I'm about to go out and seize the day. And I really liked how this scene was written because it was very realistic. So I'll try to describe for the listeners. She essentially, like, she's wearing a lace cap all the time. She wears a lace cap, which is like the most proper thing you can do. And so she takes it off. She's in her brother's study and she walks to the fire and she throws it in the fire and she's like, nothing's happening. So she's about to like grab it because she's like, oh, why did I do that? And then it bursts into flames and she's like, oh, snap. And then she just starts like kind of manically laughing. and I just, again, the way that you read it, like it felt very real of like, you know, it wasn't just like cold scene of like, you know, she just casually throws it in and is like, yeah, I'm ready to go. Like it was very Callie, right? She had an intense reaction to it.
Yeah, definitely. It's such a good scene.
But yeah, so I'm curious, what would your like favorite scene of the book be?
That's so hard. I think one of my favorite things, one of the, as I told you, I reread this book a couple times and that I come back to a lot is the fencing one. I just love the whole thing, and not even because of the part, the spicy part, it's because of the conversation that comes afterwards, as you said, you mentioned it a little bit, and I just love them. I love that part, those parts where she tells him almost the whole truth of why she's doing the things that she's doing, and he's just like, almost as if like, I'll do whatever I can to help you become this Skelly, you know, and I just love that so much.
Yeah, that was definitely, again, like a scene that like led to him becoming more likable and endearing. was like when he's like even the scene where he's like, I get it. Like, I get that, like, you want to find Callie. And she's like, yes. Like, that just, like, felt so natural when you're trying to, like, explain something to someone. And you're just like, I feel like I'm not making sense because my brain isn't getting it. And then they're like, no, I get it. Like, I totally get what you're saying. You're just like, yeah.
Exactly. Yes. That feeling that, oh my God, I'm not crazy.
Yeah, definitely. So now that we've kind of, we're almost at the end, I do want to bring up something in this book that did annoy me, that I didn't particularly like, but this is also not just this book. This is like an ongoing thing in historical romances that deal with like the Ton or like London society. And that's how mistresses and courtesans are talked about. So this book was interesting because it definitely, it made it a bit more complex than like most mainstream historical romances that basically just like, you know, put the mistress or the courtesan in like the villain category and be like, they're bad. They're not as good as, you know, like the women of London society. And so the first thing, Callie has like a very interesting, because like it's both like essentially like a view of courtesans is like they're below her because they're on like the edges of society, but she's also jealous because she views them as being very free because they're able to like go to taverns and like have this freedom that she doesn't have being like in the top tiers of London society. And one thing, the first thing I found that was really interesting is when Gabriel kind of remarks on this. And he says, quote, for context. So from this, I kind of think he's both insulting them, but also trying to be like, Callie, you don't get the whole picture. He says, quote, you are too valuable to play mistress to some society dandy, Callie. It's not a glamorous role, not a romantic one. Those women live in gilded cages. You should have a pedestal. End quote. And I think he also says somewhere that like they're beholden to their like masters. Like that's how they survive, is by like someone paying them. And if that man decides that they don't want to be with them and pay them anymore, then they're sort of like left to find another person to rely on. And then she kind of remarks, is like, well, I'm also in a cage. It's just a different guild, I think is what she says. Yeah. So anyways, I feel like one of the reasons this kind of annoyed me is because I was like, I think it's like the general issues that you get into of class, you know, when most historical romances don't really deal with class because it would be super, super complex. Some of them do it very well. I'm not going to deny that. And so, again, I'm not like expecting this like fleshed out version, but I think it was just really interesting to have her, like Callie, have this perspective, because it sort of rang to me as being out of touch, because I was like, you know, you're the sister of an earl. Like, no matter what, you're not going to end up on the street, right? Like,
yeah,
you're going to be like sent to this fancy country home with all of these servants. So it kind of rang as like, you know, because when we talk about like courtesans and like, you know, essentially like sex work and like, you know, we call it the oldest profession, but like, you know, selling your body to make money in these narratives, the way that it's framed, I think, I don't know, can be kind of telling of the character. So sorry, that was kind of like a rant, but kind of like something that like stuck with me. But I'm curious if you like picked up on any of that or like your thoughts for this book.
I'm trying to think, because I think in this one it didn't faze me much, because again, I put myself like, this is she's on way different world than what we are now, right? So it's not, and she doesn't necessarily them that harsh. Like I've read books that have been very harsh about them. Mm-hmm. Obviously she's not like, oh my god, they're the high class of society, but she's never like demeaning, you know, towards them. It's more like, as you said, like I feel like she's a little bit more naive about it, actually, more than anything. Yeah. Like she doesn't understand, which is makes sense considering where she lives, but she doesn't understand the reality of life, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't think in this one, because we just met, what was her name, Natasha?
Yeah.
And yeah, it's much like standard, I think, that she was the mistress and then the guys decide not to have a mistress anymore and then move on with life.
Yeah.
So it didn't particularly hit me in this book. I've definitely read worse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I think, yeah, I mean, that's very understandable for historical romance. I think any historical romance reader will be like, Randy, this book is not even near. And I'm like, yeah, but also I was talking about it on the radio, so I was like, I gotta hit all the points.
Yeah.
But I will say, like, the other thing I liked about this book is they didn't make Natasha the villain. So she's not like this conniving. She's not the villain. She actually has this like fantastic conversation with Callie towards the end of the book, that sort of like lends some advice. She's like, I fell in love with this man. He didn't love me back. And so I left. And then Callie says, well, would you have been with him even though he didn't love you? And she's like, no, I loved him too much that it wouldn't have been worth it. And so I actually think mm-hmm. It was a good conversation that was interesting to read. So yeah, definitely this book is not nearly that bad. And yeah, I don't think it's making like definite statements. It's kind of acting to like complicate it a bit. Like not so much. Mm-hmm. Like I've read, obviously, like when you read historical romance where like the main character is a mistress or is a courtesan, it, you know, you're getting a way more in-depth narrative.
It's a whole different.
But I think this book tries a little bit to like explore it beyond just like labeling mistresses as being bad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
So, and as you said, like we actually see her interactions a little bit, so
mm-hmm.
it's not too bad.
Exactly. All right. Well, we are at the end of our time. But this episode was so fantastic. I'm so glad you recommended this book. I really need to read, because this is a series. So I need to read. I just want to read Juliana's book. Have you read Juliana's book?
Yes. And it competes with my favorite with this one. I was going to tell you, because Nicholas wasn't my favorite. I was so excited. And then it kind of disappointed me. But Juliana's, I remember finishing and being like, so I don't even know, so much adrenaline. It was so good. It's very dramatic. It has a lot of angst, but it's so good. Like, I think you would like it. Yeah.
Fantastic.
It's really good.
Well, It's next on my list. Okay, well, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show, Nicole. Everybody, all the listeners, please go give Nicole a follow on Instagram at nicole.booknerd. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Oh, thank you so much for inviting me. It was great.